Good morning, everyone, and thank you for attending. I will try to get this through this as quickly as possible because I do believe that the Q&A is generally far more insightful and candid. I'm not going to focus too much on real estate dynamics. I think is more about real estate as an asset class and more particularly REITs as a solution for real estate as an asset class. And the reason I don't want to talk too much about short-term dynamics is that I think that it's more important to focus on the longer-term fundamentals and dynamics. And certainly, at the moment, I think the REITs have rarely looked better from a fundamental perspective, albeit there are still a few hairs on the story. I think it's a much more robust story than we probably saw certainly 2 years ago. First of all, I think it's worth just giving us a quick where are we or where have we come from backdrop so that you can understand my confidence. The collapse of Centro in December 2007 really was the turning point for the real estate market, albeit it did start to soften off a little bit earlier in 2007 as the subprime became more and more of an issue in financial markets. But certainly what happened was that as credit was constrained and repriced, the REIT industry, which had built a lot of its growth on the back of debt, became vulnerable. And we'll talk about that. Property transactions stalled in many countries and values have fallen. And as the Western economy has entered a recession, rents have been under pressure due to tenant decline, and we've seen incentives increase. So not a particularly pretty picture for real estate in general. And as a consequence on the REIT industry, as I mentioned, the LTV covenant, loan-to-value covenants in their debt facilities, have been under enormous pressure. The imbalance in balance sheets with gearing increasing in recent years has placed enormous strain on strategies and the actual ability to survive, quite frankly, of a number of REITs. As a consequence of these issues, we've seen dividends slashed. And interestingly, this morning, Westfield's result, they've finally come out come clean on their distribution. They're cutting it by 70% in 2010. So as a consequence, dividends from the A-REIT sector are going to be down 60% from their peak of 2007. Most vehicles have cut their development pipeline significantly, if not altogether. And in fact, Westfield, again this morning, has announced that they won't be starting anything new after 2010. And as a consequence of these things, we've seen a lot of equity raised globally and particularly in Australia, and as a consequence of that, very dilutionary on earnings and the value of these vehicles from an equity perspective. So that's a quick, I guess, backdrop. And it's been obviously enormously unsettling for investors in the sector and created absolutely unprecedented volatility, certainly in my career in the industry, which spans 20 years or so. And you can see just the share price change, daily change over the last couple of years. I guess that early part of the picture from there back, sort of typical of what we saw, really I've seen for 10, 20 years, a 2% movement was quite a big movement generally. But it's been nothing to see, 10, 20% movements a day in the industry. This is just back to July 06. So this date being Centro in December 07. So as a consequence of that, that volatility or coinciding with that volatility has been obviously a period of dramatic value decline in global REITs. Australia probably more dramatic than this. Having traded in a fairly, reasonable band for quite some period of time, however notable that it was really trading at very strong returns between 2003 and 2007, way above its average long-term return. Unfortunately, again, for reasons we'll go into, briefly. That was not sustainable, and a change in the credit market conditions created the environment or the precedent for a dramatic collapse in the industry. Now, of course, this this volatility and this price decline, value decline, has led to many criticisms of the industry, of the REIT industry in particular. Notably, obviously, the poor performance means that REITs are not a good investment. Too much other non-rental income driving returns, albeit that was less than 20%, but it certainly captured people's imagination. Too much financial engineering in terms of hedging, interest rate hedging, currency hedging, a number of other ways and means of boosting distributions. Too much debt. There's obviously been another criticism. Too much index concentration here in Australia with Westfield 50% of the index. Not really a great benchmark for investors. And of course, the other classic criticism that the sector is simply too volatile. Now, all these criticisms, I think, have some validity, but you know, you can explain a lot of this away, and I'll try to do so. But the one that gets me the most, that people highlight the most, is this issue of volatility. That listed real estate isn't like real estate. The price has changed too much. It's not real estate at all. Well, I put to you that the best thing that the real estate or the REIT industry, the listed REIT industry, could do, if this is all true, would be to simply do this: delist. All of a sudden, your daily volatility would disappear. The criticism of management, who are very much in the public domain, would start moving further and down the columns in the newspapers, because they wouldn't be required to generate the sort of daily announcements that they do as being a listed company. Of course, I believe that that's an absolute crock of an argument, and I think that the performance that we've seen to date certainly requires further analysis. There is no doubt in my mind that, as I say, between 2003 and 2007, this grey line, 2003 to 2007, being global REIT, and this line here being A REITs, was the best performing asset class for quite some time. Now, that's just ridiculous. That should never have occurred. But investors expected more and more, and the flood of money that kept coming in created really unrealistic investor expectations that then led to the subsequent price drops that were unfortunately exacerbated by the balance sheets. So I do believe that investor expectations must be factored into the volatility that has taken place. Now, it's all very good for investors to criticise the industry for poor capital management, and I'm certainly not going to apologise for the industry's poor capital management. But let's not forget things, watershed decisions or moments in the REIT industry in this country in particular the last 5 years was, for example, the decision by GPT unit holders to vote for the joint venture with Babcock and Brown. So you can't just blame management. You have to actually, investors have to take some ownership of the things that went that have come to pass. I would just note there that we lobbied very publicly and aggressively for that vote to be rejected, and we were in the press on a regular basis. So we've made other mistakes along the way. But the reality is that on things like that, I think we're proud to stand by the recommendations we made for our clients, because we could see the risks that were building up that weren't warranted. For what it's worth, what do we think should be the long-term return from the sector? We think that it's basically around about inflation plus 300 or 400 basis points. If you take inflation at 3 to 4%, you're talking about 7 to 8% total returns over the long term through cycle, like with like. When it was generating 20-30% returns for 3 years in a row, absolutely unsustainable, and clearly the industry was taking far too much risk. The risk that it was taking was clearly in the capital management side of the equation. And what we saw there was that the industry, despite rising values, decided to borrow up at the same time. Typically, when gearing rises, asset values should be falling. So what happened was you were gearing up into inflated prices. When prices correct, of course, you're very vulnerable in terms of your gearing position. Combined with that, We saw issues such as the debt nature or the structure of the debt, a lot of short-term debt maturities, the loan covenants. Why you would borrow when your loan covenant says maximum 60% debt to assets and borrow up to 40 to 50% at the top of the real estate market and then rely on an independent valuer not to devalue the property in the next couple of years is beyond me. But the reality is that that's what the industry started to do and was caught short as a consequence. Of course, the other thing that they did was that they no doubt did make a number of overpriced acquisitions. Now, what led to that was a whole range of different raft of different things, including complacency, incompetence, no doubt excess liquidity. I mean, you know, three years ago, everybody was concerned about being taken over by private equity. There was a sea of money entering the market. So the simple thing to do at that point in time was not to raise equity, but to keep generating the returns that investors demanded, you had to raise your leverage. So as a consequence, with the cheap debt available, it was such an easy thing to do, to follow the herd and leverage up. And as I said, rely on appraised-based valuations in your LTV covenants was an incredibly incompetent thing for CFOs who should have looked back at history and understood that cap rates do move through cycles, and we had a low point in the cycle in terms of cap rates back in 2006, 2007, when they had record high levels of leverage. So as a consequence, we've seen value destruction, as I say, on truly a catastrophic scale. Now, there's some examples here, largely domestic ones, but I've put in general growth, the largest real estate bankruptcy in the world that occurred earlier this year. I haven't put in Rubicon, and the reason I didn't put in Rubicon is because I don't think there was ever any value there to destruct, quite frankly. So what we've seen as a consequence is that we've seen now $50 billion of equity put into the REIT industry globally, $17 billion in Australia, in the last 12 months during the global financial crisis. I think that in itself is an amazing achievement. And the thing that I think that, and I'll come back to, but what I want to spend time explaining is that whilst there's been enormous volatility, the one thing that everybody has conveniently overlooked is liquidity. The REIT sector has given people access to liquidity if they've needed it. Now, may not be the best time to sell, that's up to the investor. But the reality is, unlike the unlisted market, you could get your money out if you needed the money. It was certainly worth a lot less than you put in probably in the last couple of years. But the reality is, as I say, if you don't need it, leave it there. If you do need it, just look at the liquidity. This is a value, not shares traded. So the shares traded would be through the roof. The reality is that this is a monthly trading of A-REITs. We've seen $5 billion at least per month, $4 or $5 billion at least per month traded in the A-REITs and over $60 billion in the US REIT industry. As I say, it's been the lifeblood of investors for investors, and I think that point should not be easily overlooked.
Have you got another chart that redoes that one? Because obviously, if the prices went down, those amounts, if it's actual dollars, the chart should be more like that, shouldn't it?
No, I think you're referring to volume. This is dollars traded. It's all very good to sell a million shares, but if the million shares were a dollar 2 years ago, it's a dollar. They're trading $1 million. If they're trading at 10 cents today, you're only going to get about $100,000.
That's what I'm saying. But it
this is dollars.
So that doesn't really show you graphically what really happened.
Well, no, it's not trying to show you volume. What it's trying to show you is that you've been able to get access to your money when you've needed it. And what I'll do is I'll show you the unlisted market to demonstrate the difference between being listed and unlisted. So if we look at the direct market, you can see the trend in transactions as a surrogate for the unlisted market to some extent, because that's the only way that unlisted investors really can get their money back is to sell the underlying real estate. You can see a dramatic drop-off in every region in the world in terms of volume of transactions, whereas the listed market in terms of value of transactions has been fairly stable through that period. The unlisted market has the taps all but turned off. Now, The great thing, again, that we've heard about the unlisted market is that, you know, the volatility or lack thereof versus the listed market. Yet MLC and Mercer came out earlier this year with an interesting a chart, and I've seen similar charts in the past that demonstrate this dotted line being the unlisted benchmark, and this listed the whole line or dark line being the ASX property trusts. You can see that over time they generally do follow each other. And what we saw is that obviously in 2007 there was a complete dislocation in markets. Now, for a good investor, this would be a great opportunity to sell out of unlisted and buy listed. The reality is, of course, nobody could get out of the unlisted market to take advantage of it. And again, I'm bemused by the people who are in the unlisted industry, who run the unlisted industry and talk about their stellar performance. Just don't ask them, could our investors